I want to thank all of you for coming today. My name is David Douglas. I work with a group called Water Advocates. It was started in 2005 as the country's first full-time advocacy organization focused on international clean drinking water, sanitation, and hygiene, and with a specific targeted focus of increasing funding from five constituencies, foundations, corporations, faith communities, civic organizations, and the United States government. And we have a sunset clause that's coming up with, it feels like, with the speed of light. At the end of 2010, we close our doors. We hope that there will be much expanded advocacy for WASH in the coming years, with many more nonprofits focused on what we think is the world's most serious public health and development problem. I want to just say a few words of thanks, or just a little background. A number of people here have been tremendously helpful in beginning to move things along. I think my first sense of the involvement, the magnitude of the involvement of American universities and colleges in WASH abroad, came around the table at CSIS, that's the Center for Strategic and International Studies, several years ago. I think Kellogg Schwab actually broached it at the end of one gathering. And then I was at a meeting of the university's council on water resources last year, where they were giving an award to Jerry Galloway. And at the table was Reagan Wascom of CSU, Colorado State. And I was struck by the, not only again, the magnitude of the involvement of WASH in WASH, but the interest, the potential interest in American universities becoming more involved with educating people in Washington, D.C. about the level of that, of their involvement. And so slowly, after talking with a number of people, including Christine Moe of down at Emory, it looked as though this might be the right time to get a sense of where universities were working and what aspect of water, sanitation, and hygiene, or the acronym WASH. And thanks to Emory looking at private American universities and Colorado State looking at public American universities, there was a survey that was completed that would be, the first aggregated look at what American universities are doing in WASH internationally. A copy of it is available in the back. It's hot off the press as of about 5 hours ago, printed in color, and it handles a number of questions. And again, I think it's important to make clear that this is the very first stage. If you look this over and say, why wasn't such and such a question asked, then we urge you to become more involved and devise an expanded survey in the coming months and years, because this is the first step of a long climb. And I think part of the survey was done not only by the sense of this information is valuable, who's doing what where, future partnerships, what universities abroad can we begin to work with, where are there aspects of certain kinds of work that we're doing that we are reinventing the wheel because other groups have better practices involved with this, how can we begin to let our legislators know in Congress that we're deeply involved in our home states in this area and they might want to look more closely at this vital issue internationally. And so I think there's a real debt for all of us in this room to particularly people at CSU and Melinda and Faith and Reagan at CSU and down at Emory from Christine and Allison and Bill have just had a tremendous help in documenting some of the baseline work of what's being done. It's being done at a critical time. We're seeing here in Congress unprecedented interest in this issue. Many of you know about the Senator Paul Simon Water for the Poor Act passed in 2005. It is now funded at the level of $315 million per year. A bill that builds on that, called the Senator Paul Simon Water for the World Act, is moving through Congress. has 30 co-sponsors in the Senate. It envisions explicitly a greater role of partnership between those universities wanting to partake and the federal government. So we're seeing the Congress has had this level of interest that's been increasing in the last 5-6 years, and we're getting signs more and more that the executive branch, which has been not noticeably in the leadership of this sector in the last 10 years or beyond, or before that, becoming aware, or I think probably they're always aware, but being willing to invest a greater degree of U.S. leadership. And many of you know about an event happening here in Washington on March 22nd at the National Geographic Society Auditorium. Hope you can be there if you haven't already RSVP'd. It will focus on what Americans are doing to work in collaboration and partnership with communities in developing countries and governments in developing countries to ratchet up safe, affordable, and sustainable water, sanitation, and hygiene. In addition to that, it was originally planned with a focus of private citizen sector involvement. That's expanding now to have a focus on what the U.S. government, particularly the executive branch, will be focused on to help implement the Water for the Poor Act and greater degree of involvement in water generally. Under Secretary of State Maria Otero, committed to speak, and we heard last week that Secretary Clinton will be attending as well to give a significant talk on water. I want to just end here by saying that really where all this leads is to the possibility of a consortium. There are a lot of consortia out there already dealing with water, some with a focus on global health, water resources, hydrology, variety of things that already exist. And is there an opportunity in the coming years to perhaps draw people from either individual colleges and universities or existing consortia to work together to focus on a consortium focused on universities and WASH? I think the possibilities have never been, the issue has always been important. The opportunity of this country and Americans to respond to the issue, to work in partnership, has probably never been greater. And we are very fortunate that it really comes back to, if the early seeds, I think a lot of people's minds were planted around the table at CSIS, it's very appropriate that CSIS will be playing a key role in this. Catherine Bliss, who will be moderating today and speaking in just a minute, and Katrin Bowe will be helping to form a coordinating role and a leadership role at CSIS and a neutral venue that would allow many universities and individuals to come together to focus on some of the issues we've talked about before, in terms of not only knowing who's doing what where in terms of capacity training or monitoring or long-term monitoring or training the next generation of professionals or implementation, but also in letting the federal government and representatives know that there's a lot of activity back in their home states on this issue. And it would be very important for many people who've never thought about this issue internationally to take a deeper look. So it's wonderful to have CSIS as deeply involved as it will be. And finally, I think the issue is this is not just about a consortium. It's not about the universities themselves getting more money or helping with more research. At the end of the day, it's about people. The nearly 1 billion people that don't have clean water and the 2.5 billion people that don't have an adequate way of disposing of their daily human waste. It's about how they are able to obtain and to work with Americans in obtaining safe, affordable, and sustainable water and sanitation. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. My name is Catherine Bliss. I'm at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and it's a pleasure to be here today. It's been wonderful to have been working with Water Advocates and many of our university colleagues on putting together this event and thinking through the implications of trying to focus more attention on the links between universities and university experience and capacity and expertise and the water, sanitation, and hygiene sector. So it's my pleasure at this moment to introduce to you two panelists who have been instrumental in carrying out the survey that David described earlier, a survey looking at the wide variety of categories and locations where universities the work that universities are carrying out and the geographic locations where they are undertaking that work internationally. I will first introduce Christine Mo, who is the Eugene J. Gangarosa Professor of Safe Water and Sanitation and the Director of the Center for Global Safe Water at Emory University. And she's at the Ryan School of Public Health at Emory University. Christine will provide some opening remarks and frame some of our discussion regarding the survey. Melinda Lightworthy, Associate Professor of Forest, Rangeland, and Watershed Stewardship at Colorado State University, will then present some of the more intricate details of the survey and some of the results that you will see if you have had a chance to pick up the report, which provides greater detail. And copies of those are in the back. They will also be available on the CSIS website at www.csis.org/water. But first, let me turn it over to Christine, and we'll load up the slides at the same time.
Okay. Thank you. So thank you so much for coming this afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here and have a chance to talk with you.
Slide show, sorry.
Go down. Okay, so I represent our Center for Global Safe Water at Emory, and this is actually a small consortium of Atlanta-based institutions that work on water sanitation and hygiene and health. And this is made up of two universities, Emory University and Georgia Tech University, and several schools within both universities. Also, the Centers for Disease Control, the Carter Center, and two NGOs that work heavily in water and sanitation and health care and water for people. So all of these are Atlanta-based institutions. Some of them are research institutions like Emory and Georgia Tech, as well as teaching institutions. And these other groups, CDC, Carter Center, CARE, and Water for People are implementing institutions. And CDC actually falls in between because it also does some research in this area. So to set the stage, these are some statistics that come from WHO and UNICEF, and these are estimates because it's obviously difficult to estimate exactly how many people in the world do not have access to what the WHO defines as improved water. But roughly, it's about 1 billion people, or about 17% of the global population. And the definition of improved water supply is not necessarily the same as safe water. There are some wells or pumps or even piped water supplies that may have water that's not safe in terms of microbiological quality or chemical quality. If we look at sanitation, next slide please. The situation is even more dire because it's about 40% of the global population does not have access to basic sanitation. So it's really hard to imagine that such a large proportion of the global population is without toilets, to put it bluntly. And there are some serious consequences of this, not just in terms of health, but if you think about education, about 50% of the primary schools around the world don't have toilets or safe drinking water. And in some countries, more than 50% of the girls will drop out of school because the schools don't have toilets, so they don't have privacy. And if you think about the consequences of having young girls drop out of school, not become educated, what are those consequences in terms of their ability to earn an income, to raise healthy children? It's really a large ripple effect just from the simple lack of a toilet. Next slide, please. In terms of the health impact, again, this is difficult to estimate, but essentially the WHO and UNICEF estimate about 5,000 children are dying each day from diseases related to unsafe drinking water, inadequate quantities of water for hygiene, and lack of sanitation. And another statistic that's often ignored is that up to maybe 40% of school-aged children have hand-length infections or worm infections. And these are not infections that cause a lot of mortality, but they can cause impaired cognitive function. So you could have large proportions of the population with these worm infections that are unable to learn as well. And what are the consequences of that for the development of a country, the economic development of a country? So these are sort of silent infections associated with lack of sanitation. Next slide, please. So what can U.S. universities do to contribute to help this situation? And I would like to put forth to you that there's really a need for a radical change in the way that we approach, that the world approaches providing water and sanitation. That for the past 20 to 30 years, there have been a lot of mistakes made in this sector, and mistakes that continue to be made. So sometimes it's the use of inappropriate technology. Sometimes it's failure to engage the community in a project implementing water or sanitation. Sometimes it's total lack of sustainability, so pumps that break down, latrines that fill up, and nobody does anything about it. So a lot of mistakes have been made, and another big issue is lack of capacity within the countries, lack of capacity to operate and maintain water and sanitation systems, and to develop and implement water and sanitation for themselves. So these problems of not learning from the mistakes of the past and not having capacity within the country have been big limitations in moving forward to address these problems. And this is where we think that U.S. universities can play an important role. And we can do this in several ways. We can do research. There are needs for better technologies, better approaches for behavior change, for working with communities. There's research needs to develop an evidence base for how can we implement water and sanitation more effectively. How can we get more bang from the buck in terms of investments in water and sanitation? How can we make smart investments and smart interventions? There's also a need for monitoring and evaluation. There are a lot of programs that are moving forward with very little examination of are they working or are they not working. And so there's a need for external evaluation of these programs to understand what works and what doesn't work and why certain programs are working or not working, and then feeding back to the governments or to the implementing organizations. Universities can also help with capacity building, building capacity in country with the government, with NGOs, with universities within the country, and also building capacity with students. And the last part is training the next generation of professionals in this area, both among our American students and students from other countries. And as a professor at a university with a program in water sanitation and hygiene, I can tell you that we have a lot of students who are passionate about this area, there's a high demand for our courses and to get into this program. And similarly, in the developing countries where we work, we see that these countries are hungry for training and for building their capacity. I would like to just show you a few examples of some projects that our university is doing, or our center is doing, and then you will hear about a lot of other interesting projects from other members of the panel. So these are just a few examples, a research example. This is a collaboration with Emory University and Georgia Tech University, and a small engineering foundation called Sumawasi in Bolivia. And here we're developing solar latrines. So these are latrines that are harnessing solar energy to heat up the temperature inside the latrine and kill the disease-causing organisms. A relatively simple idea, but it takes some technological tweaking to maximize the temperature and also to minimize the cost. So this is one project that we're doing together. Next slide, please. This is another research project. This is in Kenya, and you see this has a large number of collaborators: Emily and CARE, Water.org, SANA, Millennium Water Alliance, and Great Lakes University of Kisumu. This is a project that looks at school-based interventions for point-of-use water treatment, sanitation, and hygiene education, and looking at schools as a way to get a foothold into the community, trying to educate school children and see what impact that has on their health and also the health of their households and of the community at large. Next slide, please. This is another research project. This is also in Bolivia. This involves a couple different components. It involves participatory mapping with the communities, mapping where their sanitation facilities and water facilities are. So you see that over on the left-hand side. And then on the right-hand side, we've been training small businesses to do fiberglass to build toilets and build sinks. And this is an approach to promote market-based approaches for sanitation provision in developing countries. So this is a project in Bolivia. Next slide, please. This is an example of monitoring and evaluation. This is in a refugee camp that's run by the UNHCR, UN High Commission for Refugees in Malawi. This is a collaboration between Emory and the Centers for Disease Control. And here we were evaluating hand hygiene programs in the refugee camps. And this is an example of building capacity of in-country partners. At the top, we were working with this engineering NGO to develop technology for these solo latrines, hand in hand, working very closely with them on each aspect of the design. And below, you see that we've established a water microbiology lab at Great Lakes University in Kisumu so that they have the ability to do water testing and water analysis. And our last slide is training the next generation of WASH professionals. And this is done both at Emory University and Georgia Tech. And at the top, we have a student who's learning how to use a portable field kit for doing microbiological testing in the field. And she did this in Honduras. But we have about 50 students that go all over the world in the summer. And many of them are doing projects related to water sanitation and health and do water testing. On the far side, you see that we take our students to tour the wastewater treatment plant and learn about sewage treatment, wastewater treatment technology, and that's a very sensory experience for them. And on the bottom right-hand corner, you see students from Georgia Tech. They're actually getting in the dirt and building the solar latrines from scratch. And so it was a two-way learning experience. And I think that's my last slide, yeah? Okay, so thank you very much, and I'm now going to turn it over to Melinda, who's going to tell you more specifics about the survey and what we've learned about the activities of other universities.
Thanks, Christine. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the University WASH survey that we put into place, and really what we wanted to find out is what universities are doing and how best could we figure this out. This was funded by the Wallace Genetic Foundation. It was facilitated by the Center for Strategic and International Studies and was carried out by Emory University and Colorado State University. And I want to really acknowledge Bill, Allison, and Faith, who are sitting in the front row here, who any project like this can't be accomplished without the workers who really do most of the hard heavy lifting on this, so just thanks a lot, you guys. Let's go to the next one. So why did we do this? What are we doing with respect to this WASH survey? What did we want to find out? What we did is we put together an online survey using student voice, and we got together a list of people that we knew were doing WASH activities. We created a network from this in terms of sending out the survey and asking them to pass it forward and send it to a lot of other people to try to get a good accounting of what was happening out there. We also sent the survey out to other affiliates such as Engineers Without Borders, the University Council for Water Resources, the National Institute of Water Resources, to try to get a handle on what was going on in universities. We really put an emphasis on this issue of WASH, water, sanitation, and hygiene, and that focuses water in a very particular way. So issues that had to do with policy issues on ecosystem services or forestry policy and things like that were outside the purview of this first survey that we've undertaken. We sent the survey to a total of 189 people, and we got responses from 66. So I want to emphasize again that this is a preliminary survey. And I'm going to say it again, it's preliminary, and we want to follow up on this, and as any time when you do a survey, once you do it, you sort of figure out how you can make it better the next go-round, and so there's a suite of issues that we've learned about that we want to follow up from what we've learned from this first effort. So the preliminary findings, what we first did is we wanted to find out who is partnering in WASH activities. And in terms of who is partnering, we wanted to find out what other universities are actually doing WASH activities, and then with whom are they partnering with in other countries. So what other universities are they partnering with? Are they partnering with communities? Are they partnering with NGOs? We wanted to try to find out some of that information. We also wanted to find out what WASH activities were being undertaken, targeting where it's happening, what it is, but also what sorts of activities they were taking part in. We're interested in how these things are funded. In terms of funding, where is the dollars coming from? And that's something we really need to, I think, tease out a lot better than we have in this first iteration of questions we've asked. And finally, where are these activities taking place? So with respect to where, you can see that we've got sort of a concentration of activities taking place in sub-Saharan zones along the equatorial zones of the world globally, and we can see that there's a number of activities going on here. We also know that there's multiple projects going on in any of these given countries. It's not just one project, but there's several activities going on in these countries. If we go to the next slide, we can see that from the panelists just here in front of you, we've got a breadth of geographic coverage with respect to these projects that are going on. So, for example, Christine showed you a number of different things that she's doing throughout the world. I've got projects in Ethiopia. My partner institution is the University of Addis Ababa. Just since we've had these conversations, just since I've been here the last couple of days, I found out that people on the panel, as well as people I've been interacting with, also have activities going on in Ethiopia. Well, this can enrich my experience in terms of the sorts of research I'm doing there and how we can better serve the needs of the people that we're trying to work with in Ethiopia by understanding what we all are doing in these different parts of the world. Yeah. In some of the things that we've taken a look at, we see that we've got different types of projects, and Christine outlined several of those. And from our initial response that we got from the people who participated in the survey, we have education going on, we have service delivery projects, we have monitoring and evaluation, research, training, and these numbers are all predicated just upon the response that we got from the people that talked to us about what they're doing. We have another category that's called other. So the questions that we asked, sometimes people didn't feel their activity fell within a certain category that we had predefined, and so we have other things such as capacity building, infrastructure projects, actual implementation of these projects. In terms of funding sources, we recognize that there's a number of different funding sources that universities are getting dollars from. And this graph really does not speak to true dollars. What this graph speaks to is how the respondents responded. It's just the percent of responding. The answers to the question all have to do with how many people actually chose that category. So when it says that we have funding coming from universities and colleges, there's a good amount of dollars that are in-kind dollars that are spent at universities to support a professor doing his or her work. The other category here really speaks to corporate fundraising, people saying that they actually got dollars from fundraising, individual contributions. The lion's share share of most of the WASH funding for these projects comes from U.S. Government sources, and some of those U.S. government sources, as well as state sources, are sort of hidden within that category of university and college sources for funding. So the reason why we did this survey has to do with a number of really important issues that I think we speak here today about. One is communication. How can universities better communicate so we all know what's going on around the world and how we're conducting these kinds of projects? The second reason has to do is to create an inventory of these kinds of activities to better define our partnerships. And those types of partnerships are three kinds. One has to do with the partnerships we have with other universities. One has to do with how we define partnerships with universities around the world in other countries. And the third piece has to do how we can better partner and work with U.S. government agencies and NGOs. We really need to better leverage our resources and our approaches to how we're doing these sorts of activities to try and meet the Millennium Development Goals and to continue to try to improve access to water for that percentage of the world's population that don't have access. Finally, the final aspect of all this really has to do with we plan to continue this survey to collect this information, refine what we're learning about this, to really present to potentially develop a consortium of universities that can speak more holistically about this suite of issues. And with that, I'll turn it over to Catherine.
Christine and Melinda,